Good morning, everybody. It's now past 8 o'clock. Roll call, please.
Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Debbie Berry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
And for those of you who are in attendance and others so inclined, please join us for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
As everyone is aware, we have a bit of a viral problem to address public meetings, so we have allowed very limited attendance in order to meet the criteria. But we do have people online. Can you hear us? If so, just let us know.
Actually, I've got everybody else muted.
Oh, they're muted. Well, too bad. But we will have an open portion, so please pay attention. And when we arrive at that point, we'll let you weigh in. And with that being said, may I have a motion for approval to minutes. First is amendment to minutes of January 15th, which was amending resolution number 20-01-8.
So moved. Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
And then again, subject to amendment, the minutes for February 20th, 2020.
So moved. Seconded.
All in favor?
Aye.
And now our financial report.
Thank you, Commissioners. Good morning.
Good morning.
We did not prepare a presentation of the financials today. We included it in the agenda. We wanted to focus our time today mostly on the impact of COVID-19 and what we're doing, what we've done so far, what we're doing in preparation for a lot of the closures and diminished activity. Our financials are through February. They're pretty normal. They're actually up a little bit through February. Obviously, that's now going to take a turn. They're going to start going the other way. The good news is we do collect a heavy amount of our taxes in February. Through February, January, February, we had about 60% of our annual real estate taxes collected. That's good. About 40% typically come in around the August-September timeframe. When we look at our closures, we have closed Merwin's, Little Met, and Mastic Woods golf courses, the zoo. We've canceled scheduled events and rentals, and our indoor programming and gatherings are also suspended. We did some economic modeling through May 31st. We don't know how long this is going to last, so we wanted to see the impact of March 1st through May 31st. We have about $3.6 million of revenue at risk through that period of time, and we've already taken some steps to make sure we are offsetting that. We are delaying the starting, the onboarding of our seasonals. We are not incurring overtime, and we are reducing hours as appropriate for lack of need right now with some essential roles only in a lot of cases, so that saves us about $583,000 for March, April, May. Some of this is savings from not being open at the restaurant. For instance, we won't have a tips expense of approximately $50,000, which the offset of that would be the tip revenue that's in at $3.6 million I mentioned. We won't have sales tax and credit card fees of about $40,000. We won't have food, beverage, and merchandise for resale of about $240,000. We may still do some merchandise for resale at our golf courses that are open, provided that inventory is churning. We'll keep an eye on that. And we've also said to our park district that we are not going to incur any non-essential spend. So it needs to be validated for why we'd be spending on money on something right now. It's got to be the bare essentials for what it takes to keep our operations safe, secure, and at the level that we expect. Our utilities are naturally reduced. Our travel, we have no non-essential travel, no training, no programming costs, and other operating expenses throughout the park district. On a non-essential level, that's going to save us about $2.2 million. And then we've deferred capital spending of about $450,000 and have an eye on roughly another $2 million that we can also defer in the event we need to keep pushing this out a little bit. So that's what we've done so far as countermeasures. On an ongoing basis, we're doing daily cash monitoring of all inflows and outflows. We do daily chiefs calls so we can share our operational and financial updates and correlate the two. Any new information that comes in, we then take and put into a fluid financial model that we have, so we're continually recasting our cash position and what we feel we're going to need from a resource perspective to make sure we're in good shape. I will tell you that right now we are stable, we are in good shape, we think we're going to manage through this to the extent that we're good through the 31st. Now, what are the major risks? The major risks are that the impact lasts beyond May and gets into our busy season.
You know, we're budgeted to do $30 million in charges for revenue, charges for services revenue this year. That's a pretty significant chunk. We can dial back some of those expenses, of course, if we're not open, but to what extent is what we'll have to watch. We're intentionally not impacting people right now to any real degree, and we want to keep it that way. So first thing that we look at is the operational expenditures, the natural things that'll go down. We look at the non-essentials, we look at what we can defer from a capital perspective, and we keep talking about these items with our chiefs during these calls. The other major risk is going to be the potential. Now, we've not heard anything to this extent, but if there is any kind of a freeze on federal programs, we're in the middle of Tiger. We've got several projects that are large with Tiger funds behind those, so we want to make sure that we're not spending, and then when we go to seek reimbursement, because those are reimbursement backed, that there isn't any kind of a cessation of those programs or a delay in those programs, so we're left having funded those. So we're keeping a watchful eye on that.
Bill, wouldn't it be more apt to have federal expenditures accelerated rather than...
We're preparing for both sides of that.
Yes.
So on the other side of it, what sort of stuff do we have shovel ready or ready to go?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think one of the things we continue to look at is our trail matrix, where we're at, projects that have been actually funded through TLCI on the front end. So some of those, we'll work on pulling those. And Rose keeps talking about an infrastructure type federal stimulus package, which I think could be really interesting. All of that has not necessarily come down the pike yet, but I think our point is that we'll be ready for whatever is available.
It'll be sort of on a first come first sort of basis, like it was last time.
Mm-hmm.
So getting it with a bow around it.
Yes, we will be ready to go.
Does the city of Cleveland shutdown impact us in any significant way with permits or approvals, or we're already well underway with the things that we
spending
dollars on?
Yeah, again, being a separate political subdivision of the state of Ohio, all of our permitting actually comes out of the state of Ohio. We follow no approval. So
we
have not
heard today on the agenda.
A different question, it may not be one for you, and it's still new, but in terms of personnel and federal programs pending in the Congress right now, do we have any sense of how that would bear upon our staff?
So we have probably three different alternatives right now that we're talking about with our HR team that we can take a look at from a staffing perspective. We have our current one and how we're handling it. And then we have the prospect of whether there is going to be funding available, and that's actual funding or a credit mechanism. So there's kind of three ways that this can all work. We set up a special pay code for any forced time off that we can track in case there's a payroll tax credit that's implemented.
So
we'll have the ability to be flexible in those three cases. And obviously, as we get more information, we keep adjusting those too.
Thanks.
I think the last major risk that will be interesting to see if it comes to bear are the property tax collections for August and September. The county estimated that we would have a 98.56 collection rate this year. They estimated last year's as 98.22, and it was pretty accurate. If we see significant layoffs between now and property tax collections that are due by the end of June, we might see that diminish to where we have either a slower pay from some folks or some uncollectibles that get rolled into the receivable that we have of delinquent property taxes. So,
but we would expect that to be a deferral nonetheless.
We would expect it to be a deferral, but that, to be clear, we've got $10 million sitting on deferral for multiple years that go way back right now in delinquencies that the county continues to try and enforce. And what typically happens is we'll see $2 to $3 million a year go on that deferral schedule, and we'll get collections of about $1.5 million. So it continues to grow. That accrual has grown to now about $10 million over the better part of the last decade, 15 years, because we're seeing more delinquencies faster than collections on those. So deferral is a tricky word. Some of them we will get, but some of them will fall off for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's about 40% of our revenue right now that falls in, of our tax revenue that falls into that category. Sorry, Brian.
No. One may remember that under County Executive Fitzgerald, they actually sold off some of the delinquencies for a collection, and we did see a rise in collections after that point.
How much cash do we have?
When we run our payroll for this week, we'll be about $46 million.
Yeah, so
yeah. I think, just to echo Bill's sentiment, I mean, the teams have met via conference every day. We've got a very solid plan based on what we currently know. And what we know is what we can manage and execute, and then we'll continue to adjust and calibrate. And I just personally want to thank all of the staff that are working through all of this to keep the parks clean. They're continuing to be a place for people to go, not congregate, but to be outside as we continue to go through this. Again, uncharted territory, but the park district is here to respond, and we'll be ready to go.
Brian, what if we took a look at opening the zoo in sort of a limited basis?
Great question, Commissioner. We were the last zoo in Ohio to actually close. We had originally put a step down place plan in place relative to the buildings because of congregation. The challenge is with the 10 person or less rule. It's very hard for us to do that, coming into the gate and in other areas. So that has been, the thought process right now. March isn't necessarily a high number for us, so we're hopeful that March 31st, that first part of April, that we're able to reevaluate whether we can reopen the zoo in a fashion that does not allow for congregation. We couldn't necessarily guarantee people in front of exhibits not congregating in greater than 10, so that's why we're closed right now.
What is our timeline on events? Like, obviously we're canceled through March for all major things. How far out do we need to think about, in terms of just advertising and ordering and things like that? Is it a 2-month, a 3-month lead time before we?
It depends. It's going to take us, when we get back, it's going to take 2 to 3 weeks to ramp back up. We are continually, Kelly's team, Sam Carter, all of our events, we're continuing to be in contact with all of them. We're trying to operate under the guidelines that we've been currently given. Mm-hmm. And from there, we're going to operate in 2-week intervals from a staffing perspective so that we can kind of balance that. We want to be respectful, but we also want to be agile enough to be able to respond if things, the conditions do change.
Sure.
So I can tell you people have been very appreciative of our communication, and at this point in time, we have a good, solid plan. We've made contact with all the first wave shutdowns, and then we'll continue to incrementally work our way through it as things change.
That's good, thank you. And I just want to compliment the communications period, even to the public, that I think that I've seen more about what the Metro Parks is and isn't doing than a lot of other places, and that's just really good.
Well, I appreciate that. Our educators are knocking it out of the park with their different posts and things like that, trying to keep, I watched one on the swans yesterday and bald eagles, and the amount of questions. I think it's, people will still be curious, and there's still an opportunity to learn, and there's an opportunity to learn from this.
Mm-hmm. So with education, then we're online.
We are
talking about what they could actually go out and see.
Mm-hmm. And the zoo has been doing it for years. We've been doing it for Commissioner Moore's dog just came.
Boy, talk about virtual reality.
Yeah, it's my wife.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, man.
That's
a generation.
On that note, the educators continue to educate. Our buildings are currently closed.
Put a hashtag on this tab.
But everybody's responding very well from some YouTube, and we'll continue to do our Facebook Live. We're going to continue to try to put content out, programming out at certain times of the day.
Yeah, the thing that we have that other people don't have is we have the ability to release the pressure of having all the kids at home.
Yes. Again, I think it's this whole thing of social distancing and being respectful. If you get to a park, get out, get going, get moving. Those are all the things that we continue to try to promote, as options for our people. And I think we're going to see, good numbers. Again, washing your hands, and if you're sick, please stay home.
Dumb question, I guess. What kind of sanitation modality do we have for people in the park?
Our teams we've deployed, and Chief has done. I saw her car the other day. Single car staff. They've deployed all of the police officers to different areas, wiping things down, washing hands. We've gone to a paper system within the time clock area, so we don't have people logging in all at the same time. We're trying to keep people as absolutely separate as we possibly can. But we're still ramping up for the season, so our teams have been very responsive to the needs of the park and our constituents. So we're going to continue to keep them safe and are going to keep the public safe.
Right. Thank you.
Now, when the parks open, like if there are places like Edgewater Park where you have a sort of a carryout place, will those be open?
Not yet. Edgewater Beach, great example, would not open until the near the Memorial Day weekend. Merwin's and all of the others fall under the governor's edict right now. So we'll have those closed until we get further discretion. Merwin's was not set up really for takeout, neither was Emerald Necklace. So we will at some point in time have to adapt if this continues on. We'll see what happens from that end.
Stay tuned.
But it's interesting that, I mean, you have so little, there's so little showing in Ohio. I mean, it's
so little
like
testing.
At the clinic, at the clinic, we've tested half of the 50 people that have been tested as having it. And it's only, the only reason we've tested half of them is no one else is testing for it. It's the clinic and UH, I mean, mm-hmm. we're together.
I think to Bruce's point, I don't know that we've tested all of the people yet. And I think again, what is going on from a statewide level, at least, it's the governor has really, I think, led in a lot of ways, trying to keep
people nationally
down. And this is not a political commentary; it's just more of these are the real things that are actually happening relative to how do we keep the population base as safe as possible. Again, the setup for this morning is indicative of that, and we're going to continue to adapt. But I think we're positioned to hopefully get ourselves through this in a relatively, hopefully, expedient time.
The sad part is that we won't have enough test kits out there to really know how many people have this, who's had it, or whether you can get it twice. So it's amazingly little information.
No, it's going to take time, and it's just a longer learning curve.
Again, Bill, your team, fantastic. The whole deployment plan, people and business is paid.
That it?
Yes, unless there's any questions.
No, I think we asked a bunch. Brian?
Yes. Good morning. New business we will get into. We have the swearing-in of two patrol officers who will stand 6 feet apart. So we'll bring Joseph and Jennifer forward. Commissioner Brinker will stand 6 feet away from them.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me, please. I, state your name.
I, Joseph Alexander Holoska.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear
that I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution
and laws of the United States of America.
And laws of the United States of America.
The Constitution and laws.
The Constitution and laws.
The State of Ohio.
The State of Ohio.
And the rules and regulations.
And the rules and regulations.
Of Cleveland Metro Parks.
Of Cleveland Metro Parks.
And I will discharge the duties.
And I shall discharge the duties.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
Of the office of patrol officer.
Of the office of patrol officer.
To which I have been appointed.
To which I have been appointed.
I will faithfully carry out.
I will faithfully carry out.
And implement.
And implement.
The policies enunciated.
The policies enunciated.
And the instructions given.
And the instructions given.
To me.
To me.
By the Board of Park Commissioners.
By the Board of Park Commissioners.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
Of the Cleveland Metropolitan Park District.
This I promise to do.
This I promise to do.
As I shall answer unto God.
As I shall answer unto God.
Excellent. And I'm not going to shake your hand. Congratulations.
I would like to congratulate Joseph and Jennifer as our newest police officer. Joseph came to us from the University of Akron's Police Academy in 2019. He graduated from the University of Akron. He has a Bachelor of Science in Emergency Management and Homeland Security. He is also a United States Coast Guard reservist. Jennifer graduated from Kent State, receiving a Bachelor of Arts with a major in Criminology and Justice Studies. Her previous employment includes the City of Cleveland's Police Department's First District, where she was most recently employed. Recommended action, appointing Jennifer and Joseph as full-time police officers for Cleveland Metro Parks is on the mid-portion of page 9.
So moved. Seconded?
Second.
I was asking for it.
I do second, yes.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
That was a transition.
Aye. Apparently so.
The next action item is the 2020 budget adjustment number 2. Bill?
We have a budget adjustment number 2 for $2,221,530. $500,746 of this is from federal and state grants and the Cleveland Foundation and some new restricted funds. The $1.639 million that you see there is the federal big grant, which is the voting infrastructure grant. And the detail and explanation of these adjustments by category can be found on pages 42 to 44 of the agenda. The net effect of all adjustments is the increase of $2,221,530. All of which is provided for by those restricted funds and grants. The board, with recommended action, is that the Board of Park Commissioners approve 2020 budget adjustment number 2 for this total of $2,221,530.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the 2020 Lake Erie Nature and Science Center educational grant, as we've done since 1969, where the Metro Parks has supported Lake Erie Nature and Science Center as part of their core mission. Their center's approximate annual operating budget is $1.6 million. This is the largest source of income, one of the largest sources of income. They get other funding from foundation, corporate grants, and private contributions. Cleveland Metro Parks continues to support their more than 165,000 people annually. The recommended action authorizing the board to grant $70,000 to the 2020 Lake Erie Nature and Science Center. Middle portion of page 10.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item is the adoption of revised multiple policies. I will turn this over to Rose, who is sitting 6 feet away from me.
Thank you, Brian. First and foremost, happy Sunshine Week. This is the Sunshine Week that the journalists celebrate, and so coincidentally, we have our processing request for public records to update. It's been 5 years since we looked at it last. Just a few modifications, given some of the updates and also given the state auditor's new compliance program. We've stated with more specificity the contact venues and conduits through which public records requests may be made, so that the public has, you know, very detailed knowledge. But really, there's nothing substantive updated, and we look forward to scoring very high on the state auditor's new compliance program that they're putting into effect this year. And we actually have in place a lot of those best practices, and as I often point out to Marty, we score high in trying to meet those best practices. So we're hopeful that we will again this year. The second policy is the electronic signature policy, in essence. It's the electronic execution of contracts, instruments, and documents. And again, coincidentally, given what we're going through right now, our e-signature capabilities helps us continue business, even when we can't get wet signatures. And this policy, again, not substantially altered, thus allowing for just one reading. And the only edit we have is the change to the Ohio Revised Code, which specifically includes the definition of blockchain technology in our electronic record. While they're in consultation with Anthony Joy, our Chief Information Officer, he mentioned there's a whole bunch of technologies we could mention there, but we've basically just adopted the Ohio Revised Code language specifically referencing blockchain technology, and so that is the edit to this policy.
So is that including blockchain technology?
Yes, it will be included and considered an electronic record at this juncture.
Because we already have, we have the ultimate system for disclosure. I've never seen anything like it. And blockchain is just a means of being able to do that in a more clandestine way if you want to. Is that something? Why would we want to do that?
So this allows us, so for instance, we do allow donations to occur through Bitcoin and through the use of blockchain technology. And so by including this in the definition of this policy, it just names blockchain technology as one of the means of what is considered an electronic record. Yeah. It doesn't mean we have to use it, but in the event that we are using it, it is recognized according to this policy as a legitimate means.
I understand. The blockchain, though, obviously relates to Bitcoins, which, you know, is something that it's a little bit dodgy accepting that, I think. Maybe because I mean, we haven't received it very often, and there's an enormous amount of fraud that connects to that, not on the supply side, not on the receiving side. And that what we have, the example against blockchain is the way we have our finances set up, where you can see everything.
Yes, yes. I appreciate your comments, Commissioner, and that's why we haven't adopted blockchain technology in greater capacities. I think our approach...
Or in any capacity, yeah, right. Except for
accepting donations.
Donations in Bitcoin. Have we ever received any...
We have. We've received, I think, 3 donations via Bitcoin. Okay. And what we do is they are immediately converted into cash.
Yeah.
So there is no fluctuation risk, currency
right.
risk on that. I think one of the... I'm sorry?
That's all visible in the records.
Yes, correct. It shows up as part of our development donations as well. We report it. I think one of the speculative opportunities in our case would be if blockchain was used by the state for a real estate title transfer. So no money, no Bitcoin, no cryptocurrency, but record keeping in terms of real estate transactions. And if that was something that we were a party to, I think it's just the state code and now our policies are allowing us to have that as a qualified electronic record.
Yeah, I see. The thing we have to remember is we are way ahead of blockchain in the way if anyone wants to see what's happening in our finances, it's here. And when you start accepting too much Bitcoin, you begin to get into the problem of where did the money come from. And it's just if we've only had 3 of them, it's not a big case. But if you're dealing with more currency, it just puts you under the eyeball a little more than I think a group like ours should have. I mean, if you're dealing in Abu Dhabi or someplace like that, I can see why you have to do it. But you know, for us, I think we ought to really think twice before we.
I think we're adaptable, Commissioner. I think that's we're keenly aware of the different levels of cryptocurrencies, and I think the process that we put into place under what the state was doing with Josh Mandel and others, we followed the guidelines and to the letter and. We'll see where it goes or it evolves at this point in time.
Thank you.
It's expensive. You know, a huge amount of data has to be kept.
Great. So that summarizes the edits to our policies, and we're doing the review as required by the bylaws, which is the review every 5 years.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Love Commissioner Moore was ahead of me. That is fantastic. This next action item is authorization for Cleveland Metro Parks Police Department to enter into intergovernmental cooperative or mutual aid agreements as a continued cooperation through Cuyahoga County, Hinckley Township, and surrounding communities. Our chief has continued to reach out, most recently to the city of Brecksville and the city of Strongsville. This was well in play actually before our new coronavirus conversation, but having said that, it's a unique opportunity from a backup to dispatch the different functions that we provide that other municipalities can't. So we will recommend that the board authorize us to enter into these mutual aid agreements and continue working with other municipalities to provide shared services recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 11.
Are these new cities for us to have these?
They are. Yeah, that's interesting. It's in our police chief, Chief Will, has done a fantastic job of meeting all the new folks, and then commemorating some of these agreements where we have dive teams, or they have this, or I talked with Charlie Goss, the safety director. You know, they have more of a regional dispatch approach that could potentially use as a backup if we have. So it's been a really good level of conversation, and this is how government should work. They should work together to figure things out. And we've got some data, you know, because the systems aren't quite necessarily the same, but there are things that can be overcome. So it's been really good that way to have a process in place.
That's very good.
We have a number of these already.
We do, yeah. So there's probably 18 or so already. I don't know the exact.
And are those renewed then, or are they just really, once they are the agreements in place, we stay in place unless something were to change?
Correct.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you.
Yes, we have move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
The next we'll move into land acquisition, authorization of land acquisition. This is the Wall Investments property. This is probably one of the more unique properties. For those of you that are following or can see the map, this property is located at 9411 Parkview Drive in the city of Brecksville. This is near to and connected to the Gertzma farm that we just most recently purchased for 12.7 acres. Mr. Wallen he joined the Cleveland Metro Parks as a naturalist in 1938 from the Cleveland Natural History Museum. See Commissioner Moore, another connection to the Natural History Museum. He became our chief naturalist in 1954. A tributary creek of the Chippewa Creek in Brecksville was named Wallen Creek in honor of him. This property, again, is one of the more unique properties. It is designed to connect the Palmieri property, which was a partnership with the Western Reserve Land Conservancy, which was purchased back in 2017. We are most currently working with, and you will see a connection at some point in time to Parkview and 82. The Wallen family has agreed to sell the property, which does provide a basic real solid tangible connection to and in between the properties. The recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 12 to enter into a fee simple acquisition of 2.7 acres for the amount of 190.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The next land acquisition we have falls on page 13. This is a continued partnership with West Creek Conservancy. This is in the West Creek Reservation. We most recently purchased 78 acres on the former Armadale site with a partnership with the City of Parma, City of West Creek Conservancy, and Cleveland Metro Parks. This property was acquired through Clean Ohio. It's approximately 18.7 acres. It continues to provide protection for 1,900 linear feet of stream, 2.4 acres of forested wetland. Padua acquired this property from the diocese a number of years ago. It does have a building on site that we will be looking to turning it into one of our reservables. It is going to have a significant amount of flood attenuation as a partnership with the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. They have purchased the property for $1.2 million. Correct, Commissioner Moore, is a jigsaw puzzle that we continue to add. Parma being, you know, one of the largest communities, top 10 in the state of Ohio, to be able to find large chunks of land to put things together has absolutely been fantastic. Kyle, Stephanie, and the team continue to work with the towers of PLC and other land. We continue to look to go north of West Bridgewood Road. We continue to go south. Our ultimate goal is to end up in Seven Hills and continue down to the Cuyahoga River. So this is, again, another long-term partnership with West Creek Conservancy, the City of Parma, Clean Ohio Funds, and the Metro Parks.
What is that little pie shape around here there? How did that stay in place?
The little green, the little sliver, that was acquired as part of Parmadale. You have to remember, Padua's property was part of Parmadale many, many years ago and then broken off under Padua Franciscan's terms because they needed more space for fields and ball diamonds.
Move the motion.
You what?
Second.
On favor. Okay.
I appreciate that. The next action item we have is authorization of easements, acquisitions, Norfolk Southern Railway, Wendy Park Bridge, Whiskey Island Connector. This is a continuation of the Tiger project. We have continued to work to acquire the various pieces of land to comply with not only the Federal Highway Admissions Administration, but working with Norfolk and Southern Railroad to make sure that we have the properties that are needed through and to connect the Whiskey Island Trail Connector and the Whiskey Island Bridge. So,
can you flash up the map? Okay, I'll send you the next map.
We can definitely go through that.
Yeah, now how does that? There's an elevation. It climbs very high right there, doesn't it?
Yes. So I'm going to be shown. So, Commissioner Moore. Essentially, what's going to happen here.
Don't break the device.
Sean's upstairs. No devices to break today. The trail will come through here, and this particular area right here, we're going to be an elevated platform, so it'll be an elevated structure. This portion right here will actually have a basically platform that will actually be craned out if they need to have access to their tunnel. So it's a removable deck portion in order to get over it, because the distance between the road here and the pinch point coming around to Edgewater Marina, that this is allowed for right through here on a raised platform. It will come up and then drop down, and we've worked to be in compliance with not only the railroad but the road easement and right of way. So we can provide you a picture. You've seen it actually before in previous iterations, It's a wood structure coming up, and it'll be a plate that will come out with a crane. They can set it to the side, they can do their work, and then the plate goes back in and the bridge is continued on. So they found a very creative engineering solution to our very challenging. This is probably one of the tightest sections of trail that we'll build anywhere in the park district.
Yeah.
How wide is that section, do you know?
I think it's compliant, and Sean can probably text me the exact distance, but I would assume it's 8 to 10 feet.
It's really tight.
Yeah, to meet the standards. So again, these are very interesting pieces of property. They're 0.02, 0.09, and 0.24 aerial easements, permanent easements for the Whiskey Island Connector. Again, this is all work that Kyle and his team, Stephanie, have worked with Norfolk and Southern Railroad Corporation. Recommended action falls in the bottom portion of page 15.
Move the motion.
Second.
Enthusiastically move the motion.
Yeah, second that too.
All in favor? Aye.
The next action item is change order number 3. Change order number 3, contract 1524, Nature Education Building Renovation. This is known as the NEB. This is in North Chagrin. We awarded back in 2019, November 6461, to James Martin to do the work. We did do a park tour out there, and it was noticed that it looked like the beavers had eaten the bottom of the building. Although that was not the case, we decided to redo and reframe all of the exterior, remove the ductwork. We did ongoing maintenance. We're going to be doing trim, soffits, gutters, downspouts, and all new engineered wood for the outside and new light fixtures. So this is all part of this. I'm also very proud to say that our grants and donations team has raised almost 90% of the funds that are going into this. So it's been a great story. We look forward to bringing school children back to school when the time is appropriate.
Right. In all governmental permits issued.
There is a truth to that.
How did we raise the money? How did that work? Did we solicit specific people that had a great deal of interest in it?
Yes, absolutely. Not only that, but there were a few estates that we were able to get funding through as well. And then there are just some that were just COVID. There's some new ones that were just, you know, really happy to be able to participate in nature education at the preschool level, and the Raise the Roof event also did raise funds for this as well.
And was there some sort of recognition given to the people that
Now we've sent out numbers of letters, and there'll be a recognition of some sort on the building for those who've helped to a certain level. Recommended action falls on the top portion of page 17.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
The next is an authorization to enter into a grant and commit funds. It is called CHEERS, and I think we all need a little bit of cheer in our life. This is the Cleveland Harbor Eastern Embayment Resilience Study. The commissioners have seen this a number of times. This is a block of land near the East 55th and 72nd area. We will continue to look and prep and work with not only all of our partners along the way, but including the National Fish and Wildlife, the City of Cleveland, the Port Authority, and others, have, including ODNR and Ohio Department of Transportation, have all put funds into this. This is through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association and a host of others that have helped bring the funds forward for a total price of $251,000. Cleveland Metro Parks is the application sponsor. Again, we will be receiving funds from our partner organizations in the amount of $100,800. Recommend action falls the top portion of page 18.
We'll just make one typo correction to the title. It mentions Lakeside Reservation. We meant to put Lakefront Reservation.
Yeah. Yes. I actually liked it as Lakeside Reservation because it wasn't the entire lakefront. So.
Move the motion.
That's why I loved it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Just a quick question on that. RFPs or proposals have come in, or?
They have done one round of vetting to get the list down,
okay.
And then they'll be going through the final interviews. I believe it's three that they were going to settle on.
Good responses? I mean,
not only good, but excellent is what I said, based on what we saw.
Good.
Refresh my memory. Who will be going over those? Will we be leading that?
We are definitely leading it, but our partner agencies that include ODOT, ODNR, Port Authority, City of Cleveland. This is, again, if you look at the theme of this entire agenda, it's partnerships, collaborations, and how do we move things forward. This is another really great example of looking at an area that is, you know, relatively unique in its dynamic and along the lake area.
Lakeside,
that's why I like it.
So, right. So we're sort of chairing that group.
I would say we are a participant. We are a lead. No one agency is over the top of another. We're all partners. And I came through at the end of the first round, and everybody's participating. So we're the one that's applying for the grant. I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, we're the host agency is what I
it's
can say.
It's our contract.
It's our contract. But all are participating in an equal way.
Where do we have the meetings?
Where do we have them? Here.
Here. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
6 feet apart from each other, of course. I think we did the recommended action, so we're going to move on. We're going to ask for approval of the award of the single source 6506 Big Creek Floodplain Analysis. This is through and including parts of the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo. We will be doing a parking lot restoration on the western edge of the zoo. This is a whole proposal and analysis. It is again a single source. We are looking at for the Jacobs Group to protect, perform data collection, analysis, modeling, and regulatory review, and to create a report relative to the Big Creek floodplain analysis. This is all part of the studies that we're looking at to continue to build and continue construction on the property of the Cleveland Metro Parks Zoo. The recommended action falls in the top portion of page 22, entering with the Jacobs Group.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. The next is just an amendment to Ohio Co-op ORC 125046500 summary. This is just the purchase and installation of flooring. This is just corrections to the numbers and square footages. We've done all the asbestos abatement and throughout the building, and it's just changed our numbers throughout, and we've exceeded our threshold, so we wanted to bring that back to the board to DNR commercial flooring for the amount not to exceed $107,522.79.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
The next I will move into very quickly, the award of bids, RFPs, co-op, and single source, Cleveland Metro Parks user study and non-user assessment, as we have done for more than 30 years. This will be the fourth 10-year increment of the park user study run by Beth Petty and her team, Kelly Manderfield of Marketing. That's RFP 6491. We did get support from the Cleveland Foundation, as we have for the past three studies. RFP 6493, Employee Benefits Consulting Services. This is a continuation with Oswald for our healthcare benefits. We are venturing into the electric vehicle, Sourcewell Co-op ORC 6501 for the Chevy Bolt cars. This is the Lion Lot ADA paving at the zoo. and then upfitting of four four-wheel drive Ford Explorers for the Police Department, Ohio Co-op 6504. Mm-hmm. Our team has also, just as a side, gone down and toured the new Lordstown plant where the new trucks have the electric trucks have the potential to roll off. We're also trying to be one of the first companies in the country to actually bring one in and use it in the park-like setting. So our teams are working on that. There's no guarantee at this point.
Now, when you say the car, you don't mean the Fords, do you?
No, these are the Chevy cars, and I don't know the name of the actual truck company.
Endurance,
there we go.
But I thought it was going to be a battery company.
It is, but they're going to produce a truck off of it.
Right.
They're going to produce a truck there as well. It's supposed to be one of the biggest battery factories in the world. Hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, First Energy committed to 250 of those Endurance trucks already, at least verbally.
Yeah, there's. It's going to be really interesting. Our team went down, and I think we want to be one of the leaders in seeing what this can do for us.
Oh yeah, move the motion.
Second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
We have the approval of vouchers and payroll, two of them.
Vouchers totaling $7,997,024.83 have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code. Therefore, the recommended action is that the commissioners approve resolution number 20-03-040.
Move the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Secondly, the following vouchers totaling $130 have also been reviewed as to legality of expenditures and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code, and we recommend that the Board of Park Commissioners approves this resolution number 20-03-041.
So
move the motion.
Second. All in favor? You abstain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was
Now we have our public portion. We do have a member of the public here in attendance. Do we have people online who wish to speak?
I have it available for chat or raise your hand virtually. So if there's anybody on the online audience that would like to speak, can send a chat message or look for the raise your hand button, and I'll unmute you.
Evidently, there is no one virtually, but we have someone virtuously, so in the audience, please.
Good morning. This crisis may have brought events to a halt, but Shine Bright is the original purpose of the park, providing a beautiful natural setting, encouraging people to get out and enjoy the outdoors. And they are doing just that. A place of refuge in a time of trouble, good and good for you. Parking lots have been full, with no need for bands or food to drink. Some of the best things in life are free. On the other hand, revisiting the boat launch kiosks and the reported $100,000 said to be in the special fund. Turns out that through last month, there had been $60,000 in expenses, dropping the bottom line to $40,000, which will be more than erased with the outlay of $80,000 to cover security cameras. Seems like it would have been cheaper, as well as better community relations, to allow folks to launch their boats for free into a public waterway in a publicly supported park. Goodwill can be priceless. Finally, some tough times ahead. Let's be careful out there.
Thank you.
How much does it cost to launch a boat?
There's a season pass and a daily pass, and I can get you those.
But how do we... I think it's 5 and 35. Yeah. 5 per day or 35 for the season, if I'm not mistaken.
I see.
And again, those are designed to provide... The state was collecting that underneath their auspices. We had never been doing that, and we were looking at making sure that we have increased security, which is what the voters have actually asked us to do.
Yeah.
Okay, and my understanding is that given the circumstances, we will forego our information portion, and subject to a motion for executive session, we will be finished with our regular meeting. So for those of you who are online, we will not undertake any further business, no further voting, but we do anticipate an executive session subsequent to the meeting.
Just as a point of clarification, the information items that are currently listed under this agenda will be moved into the next agenda, and we will be, our articulating how, depending on if there are any changes in guidelines for the April meeting. And I would also like to publicly acknowledge Debbie Harrison for her last board meeting with Cleveland Metro Parks.
Anyone out there listening, you may applaud.
Debbie will be recognized for her retirement.
Yes.
She had to work this one to be able to retire at the next one. So we will be recognizing her with a party and people, hopefully in the coming weeks.
Yes. Is there a motion to go into executive session to consider the purchase and acquisition of real property?
So moved.
Seconded.
Roll call, please.
Bruce Franker?
Aye.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Dan Moore?
Yes.
Take care, everyone.
Yeah.